Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. It's fall at last. It was very warm early in the week. It got hot. People were even thinking of bringing back their air conditioners, but that would have shown weakness, and so they just made do, and now it's a little chill in the air, which is good, which is what it should be at this time of year. People are restless. People are moving ahead. People are thinking of what comes next. The college students who were here over the summer have taken off now a couple weeks ago. Some of them were eager to leave early, gone off to what? We don't know, because these are well brought up children. They were brought up to be polite and not to complain and not to brag. And what else is left after you take that away? You just gossip, I guess, and talk about the weather. So they're gone off. We don't really know these children. The boy who sat in the box of the pickup truck out north of town on the county road where the road makes a Y, he sat up there in August selling sweet corn for 10 for $3. He was living at home with his parents. He was good at hoeing corn and picking corn and selling it. John was his name, and now he's gone off to Chicago to get a job. We have no idea what will become of him. He was an English major, but raising corn maybe was more important in his upbringing than the study of English literature. What use it will have in an office job, we have no idea. College students have gone off, many of them with friends who stopped to pick them up, friends who we had never met before, strange people from odd cities, Chicago and Omaha, came through Lake Wobegon, and they smiled at us, peculiar smiles. We weren't sure what those smiles meant, what they had been told about us. We only knew that when they arrived in Lake Wobegon, after 2 or 3 minutes of introductions and small talk, they reached for their phones, and they realized that we have very poor cell coverage. And they were unable to text, and they were unable to Google. And there are a few places in town where you get pretty good reception, down along the lake and out on the dock, up in the cemetery, oddly, but they didn't think to go there, and nobody told them. And so they were eager to get out of town as fast as possible. We waved goodbye, and down the road they went. We wished them well, but we have no idea what we're wishing them well in or what will happen to them. The oldest man in town, Senator Kay Torvaldsen, 97 years old, maybe 98, we're not sure. He doesn't remember himself. Has taken up smoking again. He promised his mother that he would not smoke, but she's been dead now for 40 years. So he's gone back on that. Herbert Tarriton, cigarettes, he's smoking filtered. Why filtered at the age of 97, 98? We asked him. He said, because I want to live until Christmas. That's why. His daughter Mary is now too old to take care of him. His granddaughters are hoping they will not be called on. He keeps dismissing his caretakers who go away and then they come back. He lives up there in the big house all by himself. He's a historian. He knows everything that happened back in the 20s and 30s. Around 1950, he's a little vague, and last week he's got no idea, but he remembers the 20s very well. He was a young man. He used to go sleep in the woods. People didn't miss me when I went off. He said I could go off for days and days. I had a 22 rifle. I loved being out in the woods. There was a famous writer who came to town. Sinclair was his name. Oh, he said Sinclair Lewis. No, he said Lewis Sinclair. Lewis Sinclair, he wrote a book called Main Street about Sauk Center, Minnesota. No, that was Sinclair. No, it was not Sinclair Lewis. It was Lewis. Well, all right, you're 97 years old. You've got the right to be wrong. No, he wrote this book called Main Street, and he wanted to write a book about Lake Wobegon, but after they read Main Street, then they didn't want him to hang around anymore, so he went off and did did other things. Thank God this man is not driving anymore. He was death on wheels, literally. Pastor Liz got back from taking the Lutheran youth up on a camping trip on Lake Vermilion up in the Boundary Waters canoe area. She didn't want to go, but as she says in the benediction every Sunday, there are things that need to be done that will not be done unless you do them. And that was one thing. So she took them off, 12 young people and Pastor Liz. It was the most miserable week and a half of her life. She sat out there, exhausted, filthy, sitting in the smoke of a campfire, hoping it would drive away deer flies, eating horrible food. Some of the campers had eaten some bad berries from the woods. There was projectile vomiting. Other children, their bowels had turned to stone. There was vast misery. She lay up there in the smoke and looked up in the sky and saw planes going overhead, jetliners, and thought to herself, those people have toilets. They have flush toilets up in the sky. They're eating real food with utensils off plates. Why me, Lord? Why this? Why now? She came back to preach on Sunday. It was Rally Sunday at Lake Wobegon Lutheran. She preached on the chapter from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 14, in which Jesus tells his followers to pick up your cross and follow me. She felt she had already done that. It's a chapter in which Jesus says that you should give up all of your possessions. She didn't urge that on her parishioners, but she did thought maybe you could scale back a little bit. And some people are, I guess. Roger Headland and Cindy are thinking about selling the farm. She's got a good job as a facilitator down in the cities, whatever that may be. And he's thought of selling it. All of the people who would be horrified by him selling the old family farm are dead now. And he's free to do what he wants. He's not decided to do it, but he's talking about it and getting rid of it all and having a big yard sale. There have been hornets and bees around this time of year. Some people stepped on them. Irene Bunsen stepped on a whole nest of hornets, and they flew up and they bit her. She had 9 bee stings, hornet stings. She was chasing a dog who had gotten into her tomato patch and who had sucked dry her biggest tomato. It was a pound and a half. It was so big that the vine could not hold it anymore, and she had driven in 2 stakes in the ground and made a hammock for it. And the dog got under the mosquito netting and got in and sucked that tomato until it was lifeless and shrunken. It was Mr. Diener's dog, Rex, which he got from his brother down in the cities, who was a bus driver, and had this dog. He'd got it from the pound. But Milo, the brother, the driver, went through these big mood swings, and he couldn't keep the dog anymore, so he gave it to Mr. Diener, who took the dog in. It was Rex. It was a little border collie. It was a beautiful dog. And they sort of bonded, Mr. Diener and the dog, watching Twins baseball on TV. The dog really seemed to understand baseball and to wag his tail at the right times, which are not that often in a Twins game, but the dog seemed to respond, and so Mr. Diener took him out back and was playing with the baseball with him, and the dog could catch really well. He could catch grounders, not pop flies, but the dog could field grounders, and he seemed to understand what to be done. And Mr. Diener approached the Lake Wobegon Whippets to see if they wouldn't allow the dog to play in a game. They looked at the rules of the Old Sod Shanty League, and there's nothing there that specifically says dogs can't play. And so they brought him in at shortstop in a game. I mean, they were way behind because Ernie, the old knuckleballer, has not had much of a knuckleball since he gave up drinking. And so they were way behind. They put the dog in at shortstop, and he was pretty good. He could catch the ball, a ground ball, even a hard one, in his jaws, and he would race the batter to first base and tag him out. And he was good. He was awfully good. He could bat as well. Mr. Diener had taught him to bat and to hold the bat in his teeth. He couldn't swing away, but he could bunt with accuracy. And it was sort of perplexing to the team, the Avon Bards, looking at this dog with a little Whippet's cap on, standing there in the batter's box. How to pitch to him? And where was the strike zone? Did you measure it by the dog standing up or by the dog on all fours? Well, the dog was on all fours. So it was a strike zone that was about 3 inches high. And the width of home plate, it was unnerving to the pitcher. And every so often the dog would look out at the pitcher and the dog would yell, "Bark!" But there hadn't been a bark, but it threw the pitcher off. And the first two times they walked the dog and he got on base. He didn't seem to understand stealing, however, and he was called out trying to steal second even before the pitcher had pitched, and they threw him out. The dog protested the call, and the umpire stood firm, and then the umpire noticed that his left shoe and ankle were dripping wet, and that was it for Rex, and that kind of turned him toward sucking tomatoes, which you might too if you'd been frustrated in your baseball career. Anyway, Irene was bitten by 9 hornets, and they had to treat her with Benadryl. Her hand looked like a rubber glove that was full of water. Her face was all puffed up, but she chased that dog. She chased him over to Mr. Diener's house. She did not let him get off scot-free. Well, the Orioles have migrated. They're gone. The monarch butterflies are starting to leave, and pretty soon the hummingbirds will take off, and then the loons will go. And then it'll just be you and me. That's all. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.